You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
What's up, everyone? It's the Love the Jam, the podcast, coming to you, as always, with Rob. How you doing, Rob?
I'm doing not so great. Today was a real bad sports day for me, actually. Michigan lost at home to MSU, which was, you know, they're our second biggest rival, if not our biggest. And then The Clippers got clobbered in Denver in one of the ugliest performances they've had all year. So I'm personally doing fine, but it was a rough morning and afternoon of watching sports.
That sounds like a sad day. Well, that's a bummer. The Clippers have not been doing so well. By the way, that was a song that I wrote a long time ago. I hope you guys like it. And you'll hear a little bit more of it at the end of the show. Yeah, that's cool. The Clippers, on the other hand, wrote a pretty sad song today. They lost to the Denver Nuggets in Denver. What kind of felt like a carbon copy of their last game in Denver. I'll be real, I was working today. I was watching the box score of this game, hoping I'd be able to catch the end of it. And I did get off of work in time to see the fourth quarter, but they were getting blown out mercilessly. I didn't really feel like watching that, even though I do like watching some of our lesser tier players get minutes in garbage time. I didn't really feel like watching the Clippers get their bags handed to them on their way out of Denver. Can you talk about this game a little bit, Rob? What did you think about this game? I know there's not much to say, but all things considered, this was a pretty sad game.
Yeah, I mean, I think the first half, they actually played solid. They weren't great, obviously. I think they were trailing by 8 going into the third quarter, but that was mostly just because they were missing shots. They were down 64-56. 64 is a lot of points to give up. It's not like completely outrageous. And 56, yeah, you know, was solid. It's considering they're on the road, early afternoon game in Denver against a really good team, Mile High City, not a bad outcome, especially considering I think they were 0-9 from 3 in the first half. Things were actually looking okay as long as they would start hitting shots in the second half. But they didn't hit shots. They were 3-12, so better, but not by much in the second half. And everything else that they'd done decently in the first half completely came apart. They rebounded okay in the first half, got destroyed on the glass in the second half. Defense just collapsed, and it was ugly. The third quarter woes really, really continue here for the Clippers. The third quarter, they outscored 33-21, and that's really where the game was decided. The fourth quarter was just very much extended garbage time. Mm-hmm. The Clippers, I think, cut the lead to 14 at one point with 7 or 8 minutes left, but they never had any chance at winning this game after like the midpoint in the third quarter. It was very rough. And on Twitter afterwards, the only player who I shouted out was Lou Williams as being positive. Jamichael Green and Gallinari were okay for various points of the game, and that's it. After that, it was a wasteland.
Woof. Well, this is the first game I haven't really seen in a while, and I don't think I'm really excited to watch it. I don't know if I'm going to watch this game. The third quarter was continue. The first quarter, you know, they wouldn't get outscored by too much, but they did get outscored. The Nuggets are obviously one of the elite teams in the NBA. Should we read much about the starters and the starters mix? I think we were all kind of high on this mix of Clippers and the starters. But, you know, they still got behind by quite a bit early in the third quarter, and it pretty much did them in. Should we worry about the mix of these starters? Like, what do we think about the starting lineup right now? Is this the right mix for us?
I don't think so. I think Doc is really scrambling. We'll get to Twitter questions a little later. One of the questions is about Doc rotations being set in stone. If anything, I think he's probably experimenting too much instead of just sticking to what the stats and the lineup data says is good, which is that Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell are both really good, and they need to be, their minutes need to be maximized, and them playing off the bench just doesn't quite do that. Having the best bench in the NBA is, you know, very cool. It's nice to have those stats and to be the best scoring bench in, you know, 30 years or however long it is. But the Clippers continually find themselves down in the first and third quarters because their starting lineup just isn't that good. And they, I don't think they even fit that well. The only player in that starting lineup who I think should absolutely 100% have a spot is Danilo Gallinari. I'd say if anything, Pat Beverly, if their playoffs are the ultimate goal, Pat Beverly is probably the second guy who should be in there. But after that, I, you know, as much as I love Shea, and which is a lot, if they really want to make the playoffs, I'm not sure if he should be starting. The problem is, I think he should be starting because I think his development and the young guys in general is more important than making the playoffs. That again gets into another Twitter question, but I don't like his fit with Beverly particularly well. I don't think the Beverly Shea Zubac lineup is very good. On defense, it's better than the one with Gortat because Zubac is better than Gortat defensively, but he still has a lot of the same weaknesses there, and he's still just as kind of ineffective on offense unless he's getting spoon-fed buckets. Yes, he's younger than Gortat, so he's a bit better at rolling to the rim, and he's able to finish a bit stronger, but he also can't create any offense. He's a horrible passer. He really can't read the court at all. And it just does not help the team spacing, especially when Shea is not hitting those little jumpers. You have two guys who just can't really score that much, especially, you know, with the ball in their hands. And that really limits things. Honestly, you can throw Pat Beverly in there too, because he doesn't really look to score much, and his three-point shot has kind of waned as of late. So really that leaves Gallinari and then Shamet running off screens. And Shamet's good, but he is a rookie. And the past couple games, we've seen teams really game plan to take away those little screens, and he hasn't proven able to shake himself. He didn't really get any clean threes today. He had a couple nice pull-up jumpers where guys ran him off the three and he got the looks, but he was mostly invisible. He played 29 minutes. I barely noticed he was on the court. And if he's like that and everybody else is, you know, even at their normal levels, especially if Shea's having an off game, they just can't do anything offensively. And that really, it was the story today. They just couldn't get anything done. Shea was getting blocked at the rim. His jump shots weren't falling. Beverly was getting chased off the three-point line. Shamet was getting crowded. And it was all on Gallinari. And Gallo's good, but he's not that good. So I think changes have to be made. What would you suggest? I mean, I think at this point, the obvious move is to put Trez in at the starting lineup instead of Zubac for more offense and honestly probably better defense, at least in terms of switchability. But I don't know. What do you think?
It's really tough because, like you said, I think the development of the young guys is the most important thing on this team. I think particularly the development of Shea Gilgeous-Alexander is the most important thing on this team. I value that more than wins at this point, honestly. And it's kind of a weird thing to say. I want the team desperately to make the playoffs, particularly like a seventh seed. And I want them really badly to get a seventh seed and above. If they get an eighth seed, then ho-hum, that's not the worst thing. Maybe they can steal a game against the Warriors. But ultimately, I really do want them to get maybe a seventh seed if they can. I would love that. But more than anything, I want Shea to play. I want Shea and Shamet. I want to see if they can play together and how well they can play together. That's my number one priority on this team. After that, you know, is wins. I do also want to develop Zubat quite a bit because I think he is a piece for the future. And everything else, you know, honestly, is kind of secondary. I think Lou Williams and Montrezl Harrell will get their minutes regardless of whether they come off the bench or start. Gallo obviously is too good of a player to not get minutes. But my biggest thing is I want those three young guys to get minutes. That Zubat only plays, you know, about half the game or a little bit less for Trez is completely understandable. But I want him to be able to start and play a little bit with Shea and Shamet to see if they have anything together in that sense. But more importantly than anything, I want to see if Shea and Shamet can play together. So those two, obviously, I think I would still want those two starting. Gallinari as well. Beverly and Zubat. I think I like Zubat as a starter still because I really like the synergy between Harrell and Lou. So I can understand the idea of starting Trez and then maybe mixing and matching so that Trez gets quite a bit of minutes with Lou still while also playing a bit with the starters, maybe pulling Trez early, maybe at the, you know, six or so minute mark and then bringing in Lou, you know, a little bit later and then bringing Trez in to start the second quarter, something like that, where they can really utilize their minutes together. But I definitely think Trez and Lou have some, you know, we've seen the stats, and I think you had a Twitter post not that long ago that showed that Trez and Lou were in like the top six or so in the league as far as points to each other and pick and rolls and assists. Yeah. It's incredible. And it's not as surprising for us, but it would absolutely be surprising to anybody that doesn't watch this team. So I think there is a synergy idea of having those two play together, and that's still kind of ultimately off the bench. Now, the issue with starting Shea and Landry and Zubat is I think the Clippers, that's a very inexperienced squad. Shea makes mistakes. Shamet definitely makes mistakes, especially defensively.
Yes.
And so does Zubat. Zubat picks up the ball, dribbles a little bit, makes bad passes, doesn't know exactly where to go. He looks kind of lost at times, like he doesn't know the playbook, which is reasonable. With those three, if we give them minutes together as starters, I feel like the end result will be losses that we might otherwise not get if we play Lou more minutes, Beverly more minutes, Trez more minutes, you know, even some of these veteran subs like Temple and Green and eventually Chandler and Mba Mute, if he exists. I don't even know if Luke exists at this point.
Yeah, I think we can write off Luke. I think Wilson Chandler is interesting because from what we know of Doc and his history with veterans and guys who have proven themselves is that Wilson Chandler will probably start at some point this season.
Yeah.
And I just wonder who that will be for. You know, I think any one of Shea, Pat, or Shamet could go to the bench for Wilson Chandler. And in terms of long-term development, I agree with you that it should probably be Beverly, and you insert Chandler there alongside Gallo and Zubat. The problem with that is I think that would be a very bad defensive lineup. Chandler isn't horrible, but he's definitely more of a four now. I just don't think he can cover threes.
Right.
And taking out Beverly, who's, you know, the best defender in the starting unit, maybe Gallo is, but Beverly's certainly the leader and the energizer there, would just make – it would probably improve the offense a little bit, but it would tank the defense. So I do wonder if it might not be Shamet or Shea that goes to the bench when Chandler returns, and just how that will affect the rest of the lineups and how that will affect the young guys' confidence, I don't know. But I do think Chandler will play a legitimate role, and I do think he will start at some point. Maybe not right away as he learns the team and playbook and whatever, but I bet he will, you know, start. I still think, as much as I love the Lutrez combination, the best way to get offense and – even a little playmaking, really, with how Trez has improved at reading the floor, is to get Trez in there for Zubats. I like Zubats, but he's not nearly as promising or as important to me as Shamet and Shea, especially right. Shea, but even Shamet has already shown me a lot more than Zubats has. Zubats is older. He's also sneakily in his third season. He's a restricted free agent this summer, and while I know the Clippers would like to keep him, if some team makes him a big offer, I mean, he might not even be on the team next year. True. Barring a trade for like a star player, Shamet and Shea are going to be Clippers for at least next year and probably years to come. So while I like Zubats, and you know, the trade was an absolute steal, even with his, you know, his rough outings the past couple games, they absolutely stole him from the Lakers. It was an amazing trade, but I don't think his development should really be prioritized that much over winning. I think Shea and Shamet should be, but at some point, I mean, I think Trez just has to start. If you have to bring in Lou early and play him with Trez, or take Trez out early, that's probably the real solution, and put in Zubats at, you know, 7 or 8 minute mark, and then bring Harrell back in either alongside Zubats, which could maybe work against some teams, or just, you know, stagger them, you know, maybe more in 4 or 5 minute clips instead of big 10 to 11 minute blocks. I'm not sure, but I don't think benching Beverly is the answer. And I really don't want to bench Shea or Shamit. And obviously it's not Gallo. So to me, it's Zubats. But you know, again, I don't know how much of a difference that will make. I mean, I think the real solution to fixing the starting lineup is just to start Lou, but I think that works a lot better theoretically than practically because he's mm-hmm. so comfortable off the bench and his defense is less exposed against starters. I mean, even though he plays so many of his minutes against starters anyway, but I just think it has to be Trez. And, you know, I like Zubats, but he still projects to me as basically a rotation center, and Shea projects as a well above average starter, potential star. Shamit, I think, could be that JJ Redick type of fringe all-star as well. Again, that's reading a lot into them. Neither one of them might not pan out that way, but I don't see that kind of upside or promise for Zubats, and that's not even right. counting the free agency this summer. So I'd probably move him to the bench, but that just makes them even more undersized and getting hit on the glass hard enough. So I don't know if that would even help. It would hurt the defense probably, but at least it would cure the offense. I'm not sure. What did you think about the rest of the rotation, I guess? I mean, we're still seeing a little bit of Ty Wallace, but not very much. Jerome Robinson and Jonathan Motley have hit the bench after playing in the rotation for a handful of games in January, I believe. What do you think about everything else? I mean, I think the rest of the rotation is fine. I think, you know, Green and Temple deserve to get minutes as long as the Clippers are trying to win. Mm-hmm. And Ty is better than Jerome. If anything, I still want Ty to get more minutes, but I'm not sure where those would come from. But how have you liked the other guys? I guess this would be more about Green and Temple so far.
I like Green. I liked him even when he was disappointed in that first game. I saw a lot of potential for him. He's not particularly respected as a three-point shooter, so he's not like he's stretching the defense too much, but he can hit that shot, which has been nice to see. Temple is also like a nice utility guy. I don't think he's obviously shown maybe his utility, but
he played
good
defense tonight. He wasn't great. It was good mm-hmm. defense. His offense has been pretty rough. I like some of the cuts he's made. He's good at cutting backdoor and just off ball in general, but his shot has not been there. Mm-hmm. And he's demonstrated a shocking and disappointing resemblance to Avery Bradley a couple times on these pull-up jumpers. I mean, maybe it's just the sets that the Clippers have in their playbook for their shooting guard or their off-ball wings, but he had one today that was straight out of the Bradley. He came off a screen in the corner, and there were like 15 seconds on the shot clock. He did it turned into like a pick and roll. He came off the screen and just launched like a 20-footer right inside the three-point line and clanked it, and it was horrible. Okay. You know, on the whole, I think his defense is better than Bradley's because he's more versatile and he's definitely smarter offensively, but he's not been great so far. Green, I thought, was probably the Clippers' second best player today, which is not saying a heck of a lot. Right. But I think he's played pretty well. I don't know. Do you want to talk about that Grizzlies game at all, by the way, since we brought up Avery Bradley?
Yeah, I mean, Avery Bradley, 17-point scorer, Avery Bradley, 30-plus point scorer in previous game. Avery Bradley, you're not running me the right way, Clippers, Avery Bradley. He played pretty good. He hit some shots. I was afraid the Grizzlies were going to go on a run, and it would be because of Avery Bradley. So kudos, Avery Bradley. I still think you're a pretty trash player, but he played pretty well that game in what was a pretty big game against his old team. So that was a good game. I mean, I thought it was a bad game. I thought the Clippers, aside from that stretch in the second quarter, the first and second quarter with their bench, and their bench looked amazing, by the way. For a good like 6 or so minutes, everything was clicking for the bench. They were moving the ball incredibly, like not mm-hmm. even dribbling the ball, just really, really good bench performance for a few minutes. But aside from that, it was a pretty poor game. The Grizzlies are pretty much a G League team with Mike Conley right now. And they came all the way back and, you know, almost won this game. So I didn't really get too much from the game. The team looked kind of sluggish and sloppy, like they were playing the first game they played in so many days. you know, an interesting trend to me is the fact that the crunch time lineup seems to be Gallinari, Beverly, Shamet, Lou, and Trez.
Yeah.
And
you know, I don't like it.
I don't like it, but at the same time, I don't like it, period. And this is coming from a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander fan. At the same time, you can theoretically understand it. You know, they're playing, they're pretty much playing everything around the Lou Williams-Trez pick and roll. And they're trying to spread the floor otherwise. The Boston Celtic game was a great example of this. The fact that, you know, Trez played the short role and just passed to shooters. That's pretty much what they want to do. And Shamet is more ideal in that corner spot that they constantly put Shai in than Shai. So, like, I definitely think Shai should be playing, especially if Shamet's shot isn't going. But Shamet had, like, two in-and-out three-pointers and one particularly in-and-out three-pointer that had he made, you know, it would have been – it would have justified Doc quite a bit more. He also got cooked all fourth quarter.
Oh, yeah, it was bad.
And we talked about this. Every score that the Grizzlies had something to do with Shamet. And I'm not even joking. Like, he missed rotations – got lost on screens, would hedge a wrong way and just lose a guy entirely, or get blown by a scrub Memphis guard, who I can't even remember the name of, the guy who wasn't Conley.
Avery Bradley.
Yeah. So he got killed. And I think that was really, I mean, we could see
it was eye-opening.
We could see some of his flaws before that game, but that game really showed us how Shamet can get cooked.
And they were attacking him over and over. And they knew it. No matter which guard was on him. He was
absolutely
guarded with guard.
They like zeroed in on him like he was Carmelo Anthony or something. Like he was absolutely getting attacked. And that was absolutely eye-opening. And while Shamet, you know, is a frisky defender, I don't think he backs down. I don't think he's afraid. But I do think when he gets attacked like that on defense, he's a rookie. It's going to affect his confidence. And I felt like it did affect his confidence a little bit. So that was a very eye-opening thing. At the same time, like, I kind of understood Doc playing Shamet down the stretch with the offense he was trying to work. Yeah. And is it simply just a day-by-day type of thing as far as Shai versus Shamet? Objectively, in the fourth quarter, do you just play who's feeling it?
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think it really depends what you need. I mean, if Shamet is hot from three, I think you kind of have to roll with him unless he's getting destroyed like he was in that Memphis game. And even then, I mean, if he's cooking from three, you probably live with the defense. But in games when he hasn't been hot or hasn't been able to get open, like the last two games, he still provides spacing, sure, because teams respect the shit out of him, even though he's a rookie. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he doesn't offer really anything else. I mean, he doesn't rebound. He's, you know, he's not a horrible passer, but he's not a particularly good one. He's not somebody who's really going to create for others. His defense, he kind of has a nose for getting steals. He's good at making these little pokes. He had three steals today. And I think in some ways his defense could end up being okay just if he's able to get steals and improve on help D a little bit. Some of his other flaws aren't that big a deal. But it was bad. The Grizzlies game was bad. Like every single guard that the Clippers had, that the Grizzlies had, that he tried to guard, they just put a run in a pick and roll, ran them off screens, and he could not do anything about it. I thought his defense was a little bit better against the Nuggets, but again, 29 minutes, he only had one assist, zero rebounds, so he really didn't contribute anything else. Shai only had one rebound too, and that's another reason why the two of them together is kind of iffy is from a rebounding perspective. Even though they're both tall, they're weak, they're rookies, they're not going to be pulling down a ton of boards. So, yeah, that was kind of eye-opening from Shamet. And, yeah, for the closing lineup, I think it's game-to-game. Like, in the Grizzlies game, he wasn't hitting shots, and his defense was atrocious. I would have gone with Shai. Today, if the game had been close, Shai was just absolutely miserable in this game. It was probably his worst game of the season, I'd say, at least offensively. I actually thought his defense was really good. He might have been the best Clippers defender in this one, but his offense was just horrible. He couldn't get anything to fall. He was forcing things. He had some really bad turnovers. And I probably would have gone with Shamet, even though he's invisible. At least he wasn't a negative. But I think it's a game-by-game thing. But I think we've already seen that Doc trusts Shamet a little bit more just because of his pure shooting. Mm-hmm. Which is frustrating just because it's another barrier to Shai getting minutes and crunch time reps and everything. But Clippers fans are already turning on Shai. I got some tweets today asking about, you know, Shea has been struggling and this and that, and it's depressing.
I'm not into it. I'm not into it at all. Chandler Parsons is really bad at basketball, huh? Jeez. Oh,
I honestly, even though he's rich and like very good looking and I'm sure has lived a marvelous life, I feel a little bit sorry for him.
Like, I don't.
You know, at all.
Why would I? That guy's robbing that team.
Mark Cuban. He's probably kind of a dick. So, you know.
I'm pretty sure. Yeah, he doesn't seem like a guy I would want to hang out with. Like, granted, if I went to a club with him, he would just get every girl, and I'd feel depressed. But he's awful at basketball. He can't move. It was so sad watching him play, and that guy used to be pretty good.
Yeah, and then today, the Nuggets, I thought, were interestingly, for a lot of it, I didn't think they were that impressive. I think Millsap and Jokic just destroyed the Clippers, but good big men just destroy the Clippers anyway. So, you know, I wasn't taking that with a grain of salt, but they are very deep. They have a lot of good players. Lou and Trez are better than any guys they have off their bench, but on the whole, I think their bench is probably better than the Clippers just because they actually play defense and they're just more good players, if anything, than the Clippers at this point. Though, I mean, that could change when Chandler and Luke come back, as adding more depth. But the Nuggets look pretty good. The Grizzlies, I'm so glad they got that win, even though they did not play well. I mean, the Grizzlies are not good. They're missing like three of their four or five best players, and they're just full on tanking. So that was a win they needed. The Nuggets game was a schedule loss. I don't really have too much else to say about that. I think we're probably going to look at the schedule ahead and then take some Twitter questions. I don't know. Do you have anything else rotation-wise or about these past two games you wanted to discuss?
Not particularly. I mean, there's so many questions with this rotation as far as do the Clippers want to win now and versus develop their young guys. I feel like they're kind of open-ended, and whatever you want kind of just shows what direction you want the team to be in. I totally understand the idea of starting Trez over Zubat, and maybe that is the way to go for the team. I am interested in Zubat's potential as a starter just in general, but like, I don't know. I think that might be the most obvious injection of life into this starting lineup. And it showed, like, the Clippers did start. They started Trez in a game where they started pretty well. What was it? The Spurs game, right? And they started that game pretty well and played and Trez played well. And so it's already shown that he can thrive as a starter. So kind of interesting to see what decisions Doc might make, because these third quarter and first quarters are just getting really, really tiresome, and it's going to hurt this team. So I think that's about it. Oh, Joakim Noah too, 12 of 12 from the line. As good as Montrez was, and he was fantastic that game, you know, Noah just showed like that pure kind of size is just hard for Trez to overcome. And Zubat actually had some big rebounds in that fourth quarter to the point where I was like, should we just play this guy down the stretch? Because he had some big rebounds, including that one rebound where he seemed to go over the back, and the Grizzlies fans reminded me why I hated them so much. It was just like an onslaught of boos. And I was like, geez, guys, relax. It's okay. It was probably not a great call, but
Trez's lack of size was also really exposed today.
Right.
He started off the game very well the first quarter. I think he might have had all eight of his points in the first quarter, actually.
Wow.
Definitely in the first half, but I think honestly all of them might have come in the first quarter. And after that, Jokic and Millsap just stifled him. And he only played 16 minutes because he had five fouls. But they attacked him on offense and on defense and just stifled him on offense. It was a rough outing. It was probably one of his worst games since Lou was out earlier in December when he had that down stretch. But yeah, looking at the schedule ahead, four games this upcoming week. It's a big week, and it's kind of a tough schedule. I mean, they play Dallas tomorrow. It is at home, finally, after a pretty lengthy set of road games. But it's obviously second night of a back-to-back. The Mavericks are, you know, they're solid. Doncic and Kleba, who legitimately might be their two best players, Doncic definitely is, but Maxi Kleba, like, might be their second best player.
Right,
They're both questionable. And if they're both out, or if even one of them is out, I think that has to be, you know, that has to be a win. Even with both of them playing, the Clippers should win that. But the Mavericks are good. It's the second night of a back-to-back. I mean, it wouldn't be the worst loss in the world, but it would not be great. Wednesday, very tough game at Utah. Gobert is going to destroy them on both ends. It's going to be grisly. And then after that, Friday at Sacramento, again, the Kings are good. Honestly, the Kings are good. They're better than the Clippers.
They're better than the Lakers. They're better than the Spurs, man. Like, the Kings are legit. Like,
I would be
kind of surprised if they miss the playoffs at this point. Go ahead.
I kind of would be too. But if anything, the reason why they wouldn't is because the Clippers have beaten them all three times they've played this year. Now, a lot of that was Tobias Harris, who the Kings had no answer for. And with Tobias gone and Harrison Barnes on their team now, they now have a better counter for Gallo, and there's no Harris, so the Clippers don't have two big forwards who the Kings can't guard. I would not be surprised if the Clippers lost that one either. And then Sunday is home against the Knicks, which is, you know, obviously a must win. The Knicks are trash. And
they're winning. They're beating the Spurs right now, though.
I know, which could be – that's huge.
Yeah.
It's only 11 points. The Spurs are crawling back. But, yeah. I mean, I think they have to win Dallas and New York. Actually, I retract what I said about Dallas. They have to win that game. They need to win those two games. They're at home. They're at, you know, a mediocre at best team with Dallas, a very shitty team with the Knicks. And then, you know, at Utah and at Sacramento are tough. If they can pull off that Sacramento game, that might be the clinch in a playoff spot. I mean, obviously there's quite a bit of season left, but if that's a huge swing, if they win that, they already clinched the season series, obviously, but I mean, that's still, you know, a full game flop between those two teams. And it's going to be tough. I mean, they do have a day of rest. It's not a super long flight from Salt Lake City to Sacramento either. So it's not like a horrible scheduled day for them, but just Sacramento's good. They're a better team than the Clippers are, I think. And a lot of the matchup issues are gone. What do you think happens this week? I'm going to say 2-2 with Dallas and New York, though it would not shock me if they lost one of the easy games and then somehow won the Sacramento game.
Yeah, kind of like they did with that win in Miami and the loss against the Hawks. It's tough. I think they go 2-2. The Mavericks are also playing their third game in four nights, even though they're not coming off a back-to-back. So there's a hope that they're also a little bit tired, though, you know, if Doncic comes back, he'll be fairly fresh. I do think they go 2-2. They should win that Mavericks game, even with Luka back. They should win that Knick game. The Utah game is the fourth game in six nights. So that's... Mm. Even though they have a day off in between on the 25th, 26th, 27th, that's still a pretty – they're going to have some tired legs probably in that Utah game. And it's also the whole – they're going from Denver to Dallas back to Utah, so they have to deal with all that all that home court cooking that Denver and Utah both have and the altitude and all that jazz. Yeah. And Utah is just – a bad matchup for them. So I have a feeling that they're going to lose that game. I think they're going to lose that game convincingly. I think they're going to play the Kings tight, but I think the Kings will win. I think the Kings are going to be really up to play the Clippers after losing three games against them, where they came back in all three games, I want to say. So the Kings are really good. I love watching them. They're just a fun team. I love Fox. I think Bagley is a beast. I've been watching them more and more. I really enjoy Bagley. And Buddy Hield, I love these guards that run off screens and just run all over the court and find ways to get open. In an ideal world, if I was like in shape, that would be me. But it's never going to happen. So yeah. So watching a guy like Buddy Hield, Shamit, JJ Redick, I love watching those kind of players. So I love watching the Kings. I think they're going to make the playoffs. I'd be kind of surprised if they did. If they missed it, it's going to be all these tight losses they've been having. They feel like they've lost every game against a good team by like 2 points. And it's rough, but they won a really big game against Oklahoma City and they could turn the corner at any moment and really just kind of win these hard games. So I'm really looking forward to that game. That should be a good one. I think we should get to Twitter questions.
Yeah. We don't have that many. The Oscars are on. Actually, a couple of them are about the Oscars. But anyway, from at Giants on the Moon, are Doc's rotations written in pen? Have you ever seen Doc change a rotation to take advantage of a mismatch or potential mismatch?
Yeah.
I think half of this is right and half of this isn't. I think the Doc's rotations written in pen, I think, is kind of incorrect in that I think he's experimented a ton this year, sometimes too much. But I do think he doesn't adjust in quite the right ways. Like, I think the Zubats Trez thing, for example, I think should be like a game-by-game basis, where if you're playing against a big body center like Jokic, maybe you start with Zubats, and if he's right. not good, you switch to Trez. If you're playing against a team that's going smaller, just start Trez right from the get-go. But I don't think they're written in pen, but I do think he sometimes is at the same time too set in his ways in some ways and too willing to abandon good proven lineups in others. It's confusing.
It's tough because you sometimes see Doc make these little lineup changes. Like, if there is a particular guard he wants to defend, he'll bring in Sundarius Thornwell. If there's a longer player he wants to defend, sometimes he'll bring in somebody like Ty Wallace. Like, you see some little matchups that he uses, little adjustments he can use in certain games. It's not like he doesn't make any in-game adjustments. Sometimes he just flips his lineups too much, just looking for things to stick. And even then, I think that necessarily isn't adjusting to the other team as much as it is like, oh no, this combination isn't working. Let me try this combination. That's a really tempting thing to do with a team this deep. But I wouldn't say he doesn't make any particularly, you know, in lineup game changes to certain matchups. He does. I just think that he has certain guys he trusts more, and he gets that trust quickly, either from watching their games, thinking their fits with the team, or going with, you know, just going with what feels right. You know, I think he has certain intuition that he falls on. It's kind of like an old school coaching mentality where he has some of that, where he's like, this guy should play more minutes. I trust him. The whole Avery Bradley thing is a huge argument there. You know, he does that a lot. So it's kind of give and take. I don't think Doc doesn't make in-game adjustments, but I definitely think he trusts more guys more than he should and will put them in bad matchups because of that.
Yeah. The only guy this season who is absolutely should have a set role and a set number of minutes is Lou Williams. And honestly, he doesn't play enough. Right. He's the Clippers' best player. Next question from Evan Scrimshaw. Preferred outcome, 18th overall pick goes to Boston, Clips lose in 4 to Golden State, or 9 seed and keep the 14th overall pick. Honestly, probably still the playoffs, even if it's a sweep to the Warriors. I mean, the 14th pick in this draft probably isn't going to be very good. I think if you just said, or 9 seed, and then you have a chance in the lottery to move up, I'd probably take that. If you already know you're getting the 14th pick, I'd probably just take the playoffs, even if it's a route.
Yeah, I'd probably still take the playoffs, though objectively, it's hard to like objectively argue with this. The idea that lose, you know, if we keep the pick and then get Kawhi or some box office person next year, and then our pick next year is like, you know, 24 or 22 or something, obviously that's better, you know? So it's... Yeah. And I don't know so much about next year's draft and everything, but that's a lot of spots to go down and give that pick away for. So it's hard to objectively say that it's not better to keep the pick, but I want to see the team make the playoffs. I think it's invaluable for the team, even if it's against the Warriors. If the Clippers can somehow win one game against the Warriors in the postseason, it'll be worth it, man. So, yeah.
Next question is from Clips Nation editor Sabrina Merchant. Why aren't you watching the Oscars? I don't like award shows. And two, I don't watch movies ever. I think I've seen like 4 movies in the theaters this year, and I don't think a single one of them is like Oscar worthy. So that's why.
I mean, the best reason to watch a thing like the Oscars or the Grammys or whatever, the Golden Globes, is when you're with like a bunch of your friends, you're getting kind of drunk and you're just kind of laughing at everybody and their drunkenness and just all these little minutia that sneak around in the Oscars with celebrities acting semi-normal, you know? So that's the only good thing about the Oscars. I'm in Iowa. Nobody here wants to do that. So I'm recording a podcast.
I'm in California, but I'm in the Bay Area and alone in my house. So
we're pretty sad.
Anyway, next question from @myclippers. Why do you hate art and beauty? I think this is also about the Oscars. I'm honestly legitimately not like the biggest movie fan, not because I don't like movies, but just because I don't really have the time to watch them very much and don't have anybody to really watch them with, which is just makes me sound very depressing.
Yeah, but, it's a sad podcast.
It gets even sadder. Bro,
too. Jeez.
Oh, the next question makes it worse. It's from that Bill DeFilippo. I think that's how you pronounce your name. Sorry, he's a friend of mine on Twitter. what happens when we die? Is that question? So this one, we only have a couple minutes left.
But I would love to talk about this. No, keep going.
We'll bookmark this for the next podcast.
Yeah. But
my short answer is that I think there's nothing after when we die.
Oh, my God.
We just, like, rot. And, yeah, it's not a very uplifting afterlife. So I don't believe in one. So I think we all just die and things are sad. Though, depending on how depressed you are in life, maybe death is, you know, not that much of a downgrade, but for me, you know, I like living. I don't want to die.
And, oh my God.
I don't think anything happens. So yeah, that's a very depressing view of the afterlife.
Yo, whatever you believe in the afterlife, just believe in it. Do good things because of it. The whole, you know, Nietzsche thing, God is dead because we killed him. It's because you got to do good things, man. That's it. I think
positivity.
That's it. Be positive. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to be an all-star for many years.
All-star, all-defense.
All-defense. Okay. Who needs Kawhi? No, I need Kawhi. Please come Kawhi.
Then that last question, we have like 30 seconds. How would you like Clips to replace Tobias as the focal point of the offense?
You have to. Lou Williams.
It's the only answer. They need to play Lou a lot. They need to ride him hard. He should have the ball. He should touch the ball probably every single possession.
Yeah, ride him hard. Go Clippers!